Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I am Pat Boyle from CSN, joined this week by Scott Powers from TheAthletic.com. Scott, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off first with the news on Tuesday. The All-Star Game was announced. Fans got to vote in the captains. The NHL took it from there. And the Blackhawks are the most represented team. Four players going: Taves, Kane, Keith, and Crawford. But we're talking about the guys that aren't going. I mean, these are the embarrassment of riches. These are the champagne problems the Hawks have. But your thoughts on you know, Panarin, Hossa, and Anisimov not making the cut?
Yeah, it's a hard one because you can see how Kane and Crawford and Keith are certainly worthy. And Taves admitted today that he probably wasn't deserving as he has been in the past. And he felt bad because there were guys more deserving. And Anisimov and Hossa and Panarin have been so crucial to what they've been able to do this year. I mean, if you look at just the points, the goals they've scored, and for them to be successful, it's been because of those guys. And you know, for Panarin to be in the top 10 in points and just the remarkable season he's had with the goals, and it's hard for him to be missing this. You know, and you get some of it's political, and I'm sure that's a huge case with Taves. And you know, it's about what he's done and what he means to this league and all those type of things. And I think everyone gets that, but at some level for Panarin, who you know, had such a great rookie year, and he's followed it up, and he's again in the top 10 in points and so consistent. And I think for Anisimov and Hossa, maybe a little bit more understandable, and Hossa's certainly been there before. And but for Panarin, this is probably stings a little bit.
Yeah, if you're trying to grow the game and trying to, you know, we're all about scoring.
Yeah.
And you wrote a piece on the art of the one-timer, which we'll get to coming up here on the podcast. But, you know, to deny the rest of the country an opportunity to see one of the bright young stars who's doing something exceptional. Is there a way? I was sitting here racking my brain today. I mean, this is partly because it's a 3-on-3 tournament, and the way they have it set up by division, you can't take more than four from a team.
Right.
I mean, just it would not be fair. Is there a way to take more players? And, you know, they get devoted to maybe the skills competition on Saturday night or something like that. I mean, is there anything the NHL can do to bring more star power to the game and not have snubs?
Well, yeah, I think it's to their benefit to have, especially younger players. I mean, Panarin's not the youngest guy out there, but relatively young, at least to this league. And the fact that he's a Russian player, and you're always looking to grow the game in other parts of the world and attract people to the NHL. And, you know, I think in the past they've done it pretty well, bringing, you know, the younger stars and the rookies, and you know, finding other elements to bring some of those attractive young players that you couldn't always fit into the All-Star game. And now with this model, you can do it a little bit more just because you have so many players from specific divisions. But it's disappointing because he is fun to watch, and in a 3-on-3 setting, I'm sure that he could get set up for some one-timers, and there'd be some opportunities to just showcase that skill. So it's, you know, the fact that NHL chooses these things, and it's hard for them to ignore Taves, and I think everyone gets it at that at some level.
Do you think part of it too, All-Star Weekend in Los Angeles, the last weekend in January, they're going to announce the top 100 players all time, part of the centennial year here that we just started in 2017 in the National Hockey League. I think you want Taves. You want him there. You don't want him in Cabo. You want him to be a part because he's going to be on the list, probably.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like Jonathan Taves is still, like, you know, we're not bringing in some bum or something like that. It's his offensive numbers aren't the same. He's missed some time. I mean, he's still Jonathan Taves. He still does a lot of things on the ice that few people can do. So it's just one of those rare things where the Blackhawks aren't winning necessarily this year because of Jonathan Toews. So we do speak about these other guys. But like you said, I mean, that's a good point, too, is that you want Jonathan Toews there for other reasons, too. And he's the face of this organization and one of the bigger, you know, names of this league.
As you take a look at this group and the guys that we talked about with Hossa, Nisimov, and Panarin, as we, you know, just past the halfway mark of the season, have you seen Toews' game? It seems to be rounding into shape a little bit more. It's amazing to me. We talk about confidence levels from like the Ryan Hartmans and the Hinostrosas, but even three-time Stanley Cup champion, guys that are MVP of the Stanley Cup playoffs, gold medal winners, they can go through confidence problems as well. It seems like Toews has turned the corner there.
Yeah, I think even for those bigger name guys, and especially with this cap hit and, you know, what him and Kane are supposed to mean to this team, it could become even more psychological when you're not producing. And people make a big deal out of it, you know, when it's a second or third line guy, or even Panarin or someone, no one's going to give him as much, you know, fuss about if he's not producing. But with Toews, it's more noticeable, and I think he has to carry some of that burden. And I think since he's come back from the injury, especially the last week and a half, where you've seen the numbers increase, you've seen him just more opportunities around the net. I think some of the fact they have some line consistency now, I think Hinostroza, while they necessarily haven't produced, I think there's some opportunities out there, and he's in a groove with Hossa. So I think a lot of those things work to his advantage, where he was kind of going through what Kane was before, where you're seeing different line mates and maybe not getting that rhythm. So I think being healthy too, or maybe he was having to play through something, and you know, he looks like a different player, like you said, the last week or so, where, and the numbers starting to reflect that as well.
Scott Powers from theathletic.com joins us on the Hawks Talk podcast. I think it's 27 one goal games that they've been involved in this year. They've got the league best 16 or 17 wins in that department. You know, seemingly every game we're saying, you know, it was a goalie win, or it was, you know, Corey or Darling that, you know, took them to the finish line here. They're getting outshot. They're not having the puck as much as the opposition by and large. The question is, can they keep this up? I mean, do you see this sustainable? Is it a positive that there's still two levels or so to get to, and they're still atop the West? I mean, how do you rationalize and put it all together?
Yeah, the fact that you're here through 40 games, you know, you thought maybe they wouldn't get this far with doing this, and they continue to do it. I don't think Crawford falls off the map. I think you'll get that consistency. You'd certainly like to improve your odds, and if you have the puck more and are shooting more. And you know, I think with some of the moves they've actually made recently, sending guys to the AHL, they're starting to create some cap space. And you know, on CapFriendly.com, if you start looking at it, they, at the trade deadline, they could have about $5 million for a guy with a, you know, cap hit around $5 million. So you know, it's finding a willing partner and finding maybe an expiring contract. But you know, the way that they've sent Schmaltz and Mott down, guys that are closer to $1 million, and even just carrying 22 now. And Carroll's got a cheaper cap hit, and some of that it's building up cap space. And I think, you hear Joel Quenneville say it, that, you know, we're doing some things well, but this team's not perfect, and they have that other areas they can grow in. And I think part of it is maybe addressing getting another guy who can score the puck. And so I think they're somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised if Stan Bowman pulled the trigger on something like that, and they are creating the cap space. But yeah, I don't. It's hard to say, because, you know, the fact that they've gotten this far and they continue to win, and, you know, they hit that rut recently, and now they've bounced back. And you know, Kane and all these guys are aware that they're not playing the same as they have in past season, especially once they've won the cup. So I think there's an awareness of that, but how much can that change with this current roster? I don't see. I mean, unless you bring Schmaltz back and guys like that, and they've taken another step, I don't necessarily think what you have now is going to evolve much differently. So, but I mean, they are succeeding, and the fact, I think they have one of the best goaltenders in the league, and you do have clutch guys scoring, and you're starting to have some role players like Hartman, and those guys come out with big goals. So, there's some elements there that you need. It's just whether you can, like you said, can you ride that for an entire season?
He's Scott Powers from theathletic.com. On the other side, we're going to talk to Scotty about Artemi Panarin, the art of the one-timer. Scott wrote a piece in theathletic.com. He was the guy who broke the Panarin extension story, so we'll get into that on the other side.
It's sports. It's social. It's viral. It's Luke Stuckmeyer and Layla Rahimi, and it's the Next Generation Sports Show. In the Loop, every night at 6:30, 10, and 10:30 on CSN Chicago. And as soon as the show ends, turn to Facebook Live for the after show.
The next Blackhawks game on Comcast Sportsnet is against the Washington Capitals. That's this Friday. We will face off the pregame show at 5:30 on CSN. Steve Conroy will join me for that.
CSN Sports Talk Live podcast brings you the freshest takes and boldest insights on the hottest topics of the day. David Kaplan leads the conversation with a rotating panel of writers, reporters, and personalities. Don't miss a single episode. Subscribe at csnchicago.com/podcasts today.
Back here on the Hawks Talk podcast with Scott Powers from theathletic.com. Before we go any further, for those that want to check out your work and everything else Chicago sports, how can they subscribe to theathletic.com?
Yep, just go on theathletic.com, and there's subscription plans, and there's some deals. And on Twitter, I'm at by Scott Powers. But yeah, you know, they often offer, you know, 30-day deals, and kind of just check us out, and hopefully we can win you over.
And you guys, the new app is fantastic, and you guys added Toronto as well. So we'll have that great hockey flavor from north of the border as well. Let's talk about the story you broke a week and change ago, Panarin getting the contract extension. Something, you know, there's certain things you can part ways with, good players, whatever. Elite, difference-making players, you got to hold on to them. And I got to credit Stan Bowman for, in this cap-strapped environment that he's in, able to get this done and make all parties happy.
Yeah, no, it's also a temporary plan, and I think this is the best world for both sides. Right now, it allows the Blackhawks time to figure out a long-term deal. It allows Panarin to get paid in the short term in a respectable amount. But if the Blackhawks had tried to pay him long-term, I think it would have been closer to 7.5. And, you know, this way it's 6. It makes sense. The Blackhawks may still have to figure out some things this offseason to make it all work. But I think for all parties, they walked away feeling respected and good about this. And I think there's a desire for both. You know, obviously the Blackhawks want Panarin, and I think Panarin understood he could have chose anyone coming into this league, and he chose the Blackhawks for a reason. I think he gets that his success is largely due to playing with Kane and playing in this organization. So I think there's a desire by both sides, and it was key. And I don't think a lot of people saw the bridge deal coming, but it was certainly a brilliant move by both parties to work, you know, make it work for the next 2 years.
You did a piece this week on the art of the one-timer, and you know, it's something we've seen now. I think he's got 17 goals, 10 are of the one-timer variety, Panarin. Ovechkin has made a living doing it from the left circle. Panarin is doing the same. I don't know if it's a Russian thing or not, but in the piece, you talked about the physics and all the things that go into it. When you take a step back, what did you take away most from your piece on the Panarin one-timer?
I think, you know, and Troy Murray talked about this too in the piece, just how difficult it is and how you have so many skilled players in the league, and some of them just can't do this. You know, it takes so much coordination, and it takes, you know, you're dealing with a moving puck and hitting that puck in the right spot and getting the right velocity on it. And Panarin's unique in that where a lot of people who deal with a one-timer, they'll get it directly at them, and they talk about this in the physics professor spoke about it, where it's kind of like a baseball effect where you know, you're getting a ball thrown at you with speed and you're hitting it, and so it's doubling on velocity or tripling. And this year, you know, Panarin's dealing with passes from across the ice, or even the pass that he hit from Kane the other day, which is you know, one of the greater one-timers you'll ever see, where he's so far out of the circle and near the boards, and he just has a knack of adjusting his body and still hitting the puck in the right exact spot. And there's so many moving parts for that to be successful, and it also helps that having Kane on the other side passing that often. It's you know, he's putting the puck where he needs to, and they have such a chemistry and understanding of where each other is going to be that it's key. But I remember Panarin doing this last year, but I don't remember being at this level. And it's fun to see. I had a lot of fun writing the piece and kind of trying to figure out different ways to tell the story and, you know, getting to talk to him kind of on the limited basis we do just through an interpreter and how he said that, you know, the curve of stick isn't designed for this and, you know, asking about his flex and just, you know, and sometimes he said he just doesn't know where the puck's going either too, which is, you know, kind of a fun admission. But, yeah, it was a fun piece to write and just such a unique skill. And so, yeah, you just don't see it around the league that often.
It was nice to get Darling's perspective too, because, you know, what makes the one-timer work is the goalie's moving left to right or right to left, in this case left to right most of the times. But the thing that I'm kind of surprised at is, look, every team does film work. They all see the same things we see. You know, why aren't they cheating more? Why aren't they taking away that passing lane around the top of the umbrella? I mean, it's easier said than done, but, you know, these are things that, you know, may open up for Patrick on the other side of the ice if teams begin to defend the one-timer or shade Panarin's way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of passes you've seen are from Kane and even Seabrook, who's got a pretty effective shot. So, you know, you start cheating that way and you're going to see the puck fly past you another way. So that is such a key part. And as Darling said, is that, you know, when you're moving from left to right, it's such a, you know, you're blindly trying to block something that you know is already being passed this way and probably being hit your way. So there's a couple holes that you're trying to cover, but you're guessing, just as maybe sometimes Panarin's guessing where that puck is. And I mean, and you saw that. I mean, going back to that last one from what, 2 days ago. You thought he would have all the time in the world to block that and still finds a hole short side. It's just,
there's a 6'7" goalie moving over a 4x6. I mean, there isn't enough room. Seemingly, they stop everything they see. This is still coming from a good distance away. We all understand the variables involved, but it is surprising that he hits the net so many times. Like, you know, when we use the baseball analogy, how difficult it is for a hitter to hit a ball that's coming at him, to turn around a puck that's coming from an acute angle and put it on net and put it in a, you know, 1 foot by 1 foot area, it's mind-boggling.
And I thought Troy Murray made some good points too, where he talked about the specifics of if you hit it on the heel or if you hit it, you know, if you hit it different parts of the stick, it's going to end up in different places. So you got to hit it in that sweet spot. And, you know, there's certainly times where he doesn't hit the net and we don't remember those often, but it seems like more often than not. And, you know, we both get to attend practice or morning skate, and you'll see him and Kane kind of set up in the two circles and just go back and forth. And Kane hits the net often, but not as much as Panarin. I mean, he's dead on with that shot. And, when you break it down, that there's so many pieces to it, and it's unique from the goalie's perspective, the passer's perspective, because they're also seeing the ice from a different way, where they know Panarin's set up in the left circle and he's got the stick back already, and you know he's an option, and trying to sell it, maybe to give him that, you know, you give him that millisecond, and maybe that's what's the difference between that puck going in or not.
Final moment here with Scott Powers from TheAthletic.com. You mentioned earlier in the podcast about the flexibility that Stan Bowman may have at the trade deadline. Take us through where you think he might be looking and, you know, exactly how much flexibility could you see him having?
Yeah, I know specific names haven't been brought up. It might be a little bit early where teams are trying. I mean, there's a few teams who are probably out of this already. Other teams are probably deciding in the next few weeks, are they buyers or sellers, or where they stand? The other element is the Blackhawks do have to worry about the financial future. So it may be another just temporary Band-Aid, you know, sort of what they want for last year with Ladd or Vermette in the past. I mean, you're looking for someone who probably has experience, someone who you can lean on a little bit. You know, I think they have some elements they like in the younger players. I think Hannah Stroh and Hartman, you would think that Schmaltz gets another chance, and he's been playing well in Rockford. But to bring another veteran guy to this room and maybe you move Hannah Stroh back down the lineup and you find a top-line left winger, because I sort of think that was the need last year. And Ladd had his moments, but it didn't click, but I would think that's the one area where if you could find someone you can shoot it, that could be the piece. And the fact that they do have some cap flexibility with that number growing, and that also already includes Kruger's cap because he's only on the IR. So even when Kruger comes off, that money's still growing because of just I guess what they have already had stored in the AHL. So yeah, it'll be interesting here in the next month because I'm sure names. I mean, I think we saw Ginla kind of floated recently. I'm sure we'll see more of that. But yeah, the Blackhawks, you know, even I talked to a guy from Cap Friendly just yesterday about how, you know, just understanding some of the numbers they put on there and making sure I got it. And I was surprised how much the Blackhawks have been able to create by moving the small moves. I mean, the difference between, you know, Mott and Carroll being $300,000, that begins to accumulate day by day, and it's allowed the Blackhawks some flexibility when they do maybe make a move.
And you don't see a core player having to depart. I mean, I know there's a ton of no movement clauses all over the place on this roster from the core guys. So, but you don't see that being an option or needing to be an option.
No, not needing to be an option, unless it's something where Stan's thinking about the future and you know, trying what makes sense next year. If a lot of these guys hit their bonuses. And they're up against the ceiling. The Blackhawks are going to have another major cap overage just like they did this year. I think it was at 3.07 this year. And if Panarin hits that Schedule B bonus, again, they're going to be paying a lot. They've already paid Campbell's games played bonus and Kempney's games played. Forsling's received some money. And then Panarin bonuses will be massive if he hits them. So you're talking a possibility of like $3.5 million over plus Panarin's deal already, and it all adds up. And so if the Blackhawks are thinking more about the future, and you know, you have the expansion draft, there's so many different parts of that too. But but based on the cap space, they could have the deadline. And if you're just talking about this year and not worrying about the future, you don't necessarily have to move one of those core pieces.
He's Scott Powers from theathletic.com. Check out his work, and again, follow you at
by Scott Powers.
At by Scott Powers on Twitter. Thanks again, as always, and we'll catch up with you down the road. Find all of our podcasts at csnchicago.com/podcast. Subscribe to our iTunes channel from there. That's a wrap on this edition of the Hawks Talk podcast. I'm Pat Boyle. We'll see you next time.